And Senator Pappas, I don't think we have that much work left to do, right?
I think we had two amendments.
Well, we got a few more now.
Did we adopt?
We got some surprise amendments.
Did we adopt anything?
We've adopted you as a permanent Iron Ranger, but other than that...
I can't recall. Did we adopt anything or no?
I think we went through and just about did everything.
We did adopt everything.
Just except the dental provision.
The dental provision is the only thing in this bill, and then some amendments we have.
That's correct.
So... Senator Lynch, do you want to just explain to us while it's being copied what compromise was reached?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. The various stakeholders met, it was last Friday. We agreed to a compromise, and it reflects two changes that will appear in the amendment that I guess is being copied right now. One, there was a concern brought forward by the Board of Dentistry, and this new language will give them further approval in the educational component that is involved. And the second change was in the membership of the work group. You'll recall there was one of the members was from the Board of Dentistry, and the amendment further delineates that the representative from the Board of Dentistry shall also be a dentist. Mr. Chair, I'm pleased to say that of all of the representatives in attendance, including the both educational institutions, the Dental Association, the Safety Net Coalition, I hope I'm not forgetting anyone, but after some further discussion, was agreed upon by all parties that this would be an amendment that they would all be able to support in moving forward with. Mr. Chair, if I may offer the A-10 amendment at this time.
We'll pass them out right now.
Sorry, I didn't. I need to just say it.
Okay, Senator Lynch offers the A-10 amendment, and we have peace in the valley, and we eventually are going to get some, and the university and the dental school is okay with this too, as far as you know.
Mr. Chair, both institutions, the Minsky institutions and the University of Minnesota, were at the table during the discussions on the amendment and did sign off on the amendment. Yes.
Well, Minsky doesn't have a program. Brother, I should really answer him. Okay, so we have the A-10 amendment. Is there any more discussion on the A-10 amendment then? Not all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. Congratulations, Senator Lynch, and I hope that if and when this program starts, that it accomplishes your goal. Representative Poppy has the A-9 amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Just back on the A-10. Do we have to then approve the full description?
Oh, we just amended to the... No. That was drafted to the bill, correct, Senator Lynch?
Yes. But there was other language that we didn't approve, I don't think.
Yeah, you're absolutely
right. Oh, we never approved the full language. Well, we'll just wait until we get ours passed here, and then we'll move on then. So, we've amended now the language, but we haven't put it in the bill.
Okay,
Representative Poppy, I suppose we better vote on that then. So who's going to move all of the language as amended then? What page are we on?
R20 and R29.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
On the amendment that we just passed on 1.6, is it supposed to say who must be dentist?
Oh, be a dentist?
That was drafted by an Iron Ranger, and we don't need an A.
Must be dentist.
As we adopt this, we could maybe include that correction.
Representative Senator Lynch incorporates the that correction into her amendment, and now we have the.
We could do it. The
we have dentist. the A. I think would work. We have the A-10 as with the incorporation by Senator Lynch, and then that's been moved into Section 17 or excuse me, R20 and R29. But anyhow, so it's met. So now you move section 17 and section
21.
Any other questions on that as amended then? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. It is adopted. Representative Poppy, A9.
Thank you. A9.
Is it coming around or has it been? I've got a copy here. Representative Poppy, do you want to explain it while we're...
Sure. I'm just adding a couple of words. And this was the House language on page R2 and R3 that we added into the Conference Committee report. It's just on line 64.35 after the word parents to add and students. And on page 65.2, which is R3, after parent to say and student. So it just is a little bit more comprehensive as far as the people who would receive the information.
So what you're making sure is that the students see what's released to their
yes.
parents.
Ah.
That's good. Any questions on that? Mr. Fuller.
Is that permitted under federal law then?
Okay.
Okay, questions? Not all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. And members, I have an A8 amendment. And what this amendment would do is, I believe, starting in 2010. Is that correct, Ms. Novak? Starting in 2010, I believe the Office of Higher Education was going to... 2011, excuse me. 2011, the Office of Higher Ed was going to require a accreditation by the federal...
Mr. Chair.
Could you explain it, what we're trying to do here? I know what I'm trying to do, but the barber schools and cosmetology have talked about the smaller schools not being able to take students because of this accreditation, which has been put off till 2011. This would just require that they don't have to be accredited.
So. Mr. Chair, it actually requires participation in the federal Pell Grant program, which is partially related to accreditation.
They were going to be cut off if they weren't accredited.
Weren't part of the federal Pell Grant program. And this amendment exempts two types of schools from that requirement.
Does Ms. Grimes want to testify on this? Or Mr. Michikanis? Either one. Or both. We had a hearing on this in the House after our bill was sent to the floor.
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Mark Michikanis with the Office of Higher Education. This is provision that we had worked on for 2 years as an agency, and Ms. Grimes can just speak to the details of the questions. But the concern always was that these smaller schools, by not being Pell eligible, did create burdens for students because they wouldn't receive the Pell grant. So our motivation was always to get more aid to students for to cover the cost of their programs. It was simply that, because we knew and we had conversations. I did not attend your hearing this year, but last year and 2 years ago, that this would create a burden for small schools. We knew that, but I thought that the trade-off being discussed as a policy matter was that the additional aid was probably worth more than that burden might have provided. That was the conversation, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Grimes.
Mr. Chair, Tricia Grimes from the Office of Higher Education. There are currently about 16 schools that participate in the state grant program that do not participate in the federal Pell Grant program. And these schools, the students who attend these schools generally do not know that if they went to another school of a similar type, they could be getting a Pell Grant at that school, particularly if they're low income. For example, often a cosmetology school will have about 25 students. They can get themselves licensed by the State Board of Cosmetology and Barber Examiners 1 week and start having their students get self-loans, Minnesota State Loan Program, or state grants the next week. We have had schools that have told us on the phone, oh, those self-loans are paying all the bills around here. Well, the loan program was not intended to pay the bills of operating the school. The students are the ones who end up owing that loan. We've also had difficulties with schools that have too little staff to run their financial aid program, and we end up having to constantly redo and redo and redo. And so we are very concerned that, for example, that take that cosmetology school with 25 students serving a low-income population, their students might get $80,000 worth of state grants, and about half of their students might be taking out self-loans. Well, those same students would probably be eligible for at least another $80,000 in federal Pell Grants. Now, it does cost $20,000 to $30,000 a year to get accredited and stay accredited, which is what's necessary in order to get federal Pell Grants. It is not a requirement in Minnesota statute that a small for-profit school participating in the state financial aid programs be accredited.
Did you say per year?
It probably costs $20,000 per year to stay accredited. Probably costs $30,000 to get accredited. Depends on the association. The association that accredits cosmetology schools happens to have rather steep fees. Of the schools that we have had difficulties with, where we feel like there's a real question whether they have adequate administrative and financial depth to adequately run state financial aid programs, 3/4 of them are cosmetology schools.
Okay. This is mine. How many barber schools do we have in the state of Minnesota?
Mr. Chairman, we have 2 for-profit schools, and I believe there's also one run in the prison system, at Oose Lake.
And how many of them are accredited?
None.
So none of the guys at the table are going to be able to get a haircut eventually. We'll shift them into health care.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, well, no, he didn't at all. But
Mr. Chair, one option would be for the school to raise tuition, say, $500 per student, cover their costs, and their students would still be $3,000 better off out of a $4,000 Pell Grant.
I'll withdraw the amendment, but it is an issue because we have no barber schools that soon are going to be teaching barbers how to barber in this state, and I'm going to look like hell. Don't laugh, so are you, Michiganis.
Mr. Chair just got a haircut last week. So.
Yeah. I hope from a beautician and not a barber. Okay, I'll withdraw the amendment, but we need to discuss it because something got to be figured out here. We do have a few more years. Anything else to bring in front of the committee? Mr. Fuller, do we have anything unconstitutional in here? If not, I better not close the bill up yet.
There's no more amendments.
I thought Kathy was just...
Mr. Chairman, I think there's a couple... I think we decided not to adopt the P20 language...
I don't think we voted on that, so it's not in the bill.
But I think there was the data sharing language that we were asked to kind of hold off on by the Senate chair of the K-12 bill, and I'm trying to get a response from him about whether...
Are you talking about on the...
The data sharing between K-12 and higher ed that the Office of Higher Education wanted.
And I don't think it's controversial, is it at all?
No, he wanted us to...
Do you want to include it in the bill, Senator Beth? Make a motion to have it in. It's not going to hurt to have it in here, too.
Can we
should close it up so they can do it, and we can sign the report. What's the difference if you add it?
Oh, wait.
Senator?
Okay,
so we don't, that never was officially moved either. And neither, okay. So I think we have everything then, and council knows what we approved in the bill. Mr. Berg.
Mr. Albright and I had discussed that. I think you want to make the university performance funding section that you adopted, which is section 17 on the Senate side and section 34 on the House side on page R25. I think you want to make that section effective immediately. Now, that's also in House File 18 to 12, but just for safety's sake.
And finance was okay with that whole thing, right? I believe.
Well, they're okay with the language. Right. I haven't discussed the effective date, but if you think about it, it's a finance provision which would become effective on July 1st if there's no other legislation, and the university would forfeit its 08 performance money for having failed to perform on June 30th if we don't make it effective prior to that.
Okay, I'll make that motion.
Where would the effective date be placed in the side by side? R28.
So I'll move that the subdivision 2, the house language, in both.
It's exactly.
We adopted this house language section 17, so it would be after
8621.
81.25 after that.
Okay. Make that the above provision effective on that. The day following enactment. Okay.
Okay, everyone understands that then. Heard the Pappas motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman, we have a copy of the rescue board if you'd like to look at it.
Oh. And we have staff pass it out. We have the Minsky language now for the makeup of the board as fixed up by Mr. Fuller and Ms. Novak. So basically, it's just me giving in again and compromising. I'm just a great compromiser. But we already
make sure that Ms. Seagard gets it.
So this is already in the bill, and staff had been directed to do the language where the governor is not bound by these recommendations.
What's the difference, Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
What's the difference with the student members now? I mean, what are you changing here, or is that just to make it look better in the draft? I mean, do we already have three students on the board?
But there were things, they didn't have to be required to be going.
This half-time. They have to be enrolled.
That's why.
Mr. Chairman, do they just have to be enrolled when they're appointed, and then if they have three, how long are their terms? Two-year term, and they graduate, do they continue to serve out their term? It says currently enrolled.
It also says within 1 year of the date of appointment, though. They can only graduate to 1 year hence, so.
Where does it say that?
1.9.
So our students have to take at least 1 year, and they currently won't have time.
I get it, right, Mr. Chair.
Within 1 year of the date of appointment.
Okay. Senator Robin.
The way I read it is that someone could be appointed up to a year after they graduated, which I don't think I would support. Is that
Chair,
currently that's what they do? In fact, currently they only have to be we have a situation where somebody was going to enroll in a night class. That's how they got appointed. They were going to enroll in a night class.
Mr. Chair, I would really like to see them start out as a student. If they graduate during their term, I'm fine with that. But I think that if they're going to be student representatives, they should be more closely connected to the student body than being out in the work world away from the campuses during their entire term.
Do you want to put a period after program on 1.8 then? Does that solve that or not?
Because, Mr. Chairman,
yes.
This says that they have to have at least a year left in school in order to be appointed, right?
No.
Oh, I'm really confused.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chairman, current law requires that to be appointed as a student, you must be enrolled or be within 1 year of having graduated. This amendment changes the position of that but does not change the law. If it's your desire to change it so that you have to be enrolled, I would suggest deleting the words or have graduated from an institution on line 1.8.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
I would say
I think it's still not clear, though, if they have to be enrolled during their entire appointment time.
Right.
So maybe we could say that when they're appointed, they have to at least be enrolled when they're appointed. And then, you know, they may drop out or they may graduate or whatever. I mean, that's kind of hard to predict.
It does say that if you do that.
Yeah.
I think it does do that with her.
Is that what it means?
Mm-hmm. Like 1.9. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. With the amendment, that's what it would do.
Or,
certainly, members, this is much better than what the way it reads today. And quite frankly, I don't mind if some of them stay on after they're graduated, because
yeah.
we have a couple of members who have been lobbying us on textbooks and tuition. I think that one of them now that has retired. So.
Somebody read the language then.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Pappas, the language would read... The new language would read, including three members who are students who have attended an institution for at least 1 year and are currently enrolled at least half-time in a degree, diploma, or certificate program in an institution governed by the board within 1 year of the date of a... Oh, we have to take that out, too. Put a period after board and take within 1 year of the date of appointment off.
Currently enrolled at least half-time.
Mm-hmm.
Period after the board?
Yes.
And that would still give leeway when they, if they graduate, they can, or would that cut them off then?
Mr. Chairman, it would allow them to serve out their term.
Okay. Senator Roebling, is that accomplished then?
Yes, Mr.
And I
Chair.
Think that probably is makes it a little better as far as I'm concerned, too. Representative, or Senator Lynch.
Mr. Chair, does this amendment then address the concerns that were indicated by the governor's office?
Maybe Susan.
Yes, because then the governor now can refuse all, at least on the labor appointments, which I think he was concerned about. He doesn't have to accept them, much to my chagrin. But it addresses that. Representative McFarland.
I'm wondering if Susan Hegard could talk to that. She's here to him.
Ms. Hegard, do you want to address the makeup of the board? Or do you want to just automatically request that I'm on it? Don't you love to have me at the meetings?
Pardon?
Don't you just love to have me at the meetings? Ms. Hegard.
I could make them more interesting. But they're very interesting as it is. Mr. Chair and members, I have a question. Just, I need to understand the two members appointed from labor organizations. Is the governor must appoint two labor folks, but it doesn't have to be the ones recommended, or he doesn't have to appoint?
He still has to appoint two labor folks, but he doesn't have to pick off the list of six that he gets from the, I believe, still from the AFL-CIO, right?
Right.
Right. So he can pick, you know, his brother, who works, is the IBW guy, and that he talks about all the time, and me. I got a steelworker card.
Mr. Chair, I think the concern remains, I know that you've compromised from your initial position, I understand that, and but if you look at, for example, the University of Minnesota, they don't have a mandated kind of slot for labor, but there's been an understanding that there'd be a labor appointee through the years. I still think my understanding is that the governor would have a problem with a mandate requirement of two members from labor. I don't know how he would feel about one. I need to go back and check that with him, but I think two would still be problematic for him. And I think it's important for you to
Ms. Hegard and members, I think there's 12 members from the Chamber of Commerce on the Board of Trustees now, including the president. And I think most of the members are either from the business partnership or the chamber. And he's had 6 years to put somebody on from labor. And, in fact, the only labor person left was removed and not replaced with a labor person. So this is a compromise. It does not overstep the legislature's bounds. He can pick from a list, or he can, like I said, he can submit his brother or whoever he wants to. And I think... You know, I've come a long way.
Mr. Chair, respectfully, though, you know, I think if the goal is to have a bill that the governor can sign, I still think that the requirement of two will be a problem for him.
So I can go back and check if he'd be willing to go come back. I don't know if you're willing to, but I can go and check on that.
We're going to wrap. We've got to wrap the bill up now, and I don't. The governor's not going to veto the bill over this little provision, especially when he has all the leeway to ignore it. I know him. I've dealt with him since 1993. I know him well enough to know he isn't going to veto the bill over this. He might veto it over something else, although there's not much controversial in the bill. So, it's in the bill.
Okay.
Unless somebody wants to make a motion, pull it out.
Well, I can vote against the amendment.
No, it's already in the bill. Oh, that's right, this little amendment we're amending. Yes.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair, though, actually, this is an improvement over what's in the bill, right?
Yeah, it's a fix.
Well, no, we haven't adopted your language ever, have we?
Yes. We did last week. We adopted I slipped through my unconstitutional language, which, and I compromised greatly. Senator Rogan, I compromised. Unbelievable. I'm getting to be a diplomat here around here.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Hegart, if we put in that data sharing language in this bill, would that help get it signed?
Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas, that was one thing that I'd hoped that I would address. I think it's important for the committee members to understand that that provision is not an executive branch initiative at all. It came from the P16 partnership. Commissioner Seegren and I talked to legislators about it because it involves our two agencies, and people wanted to understand what data was being shared and what we collect and all of that. But it's an initiative that's been brought forward by the P16 partnership. I headed up the work group, but it wasn't me. I mean, it's really their work. And so the concern that I have right now is that it's being used for political leverage. And some things need to be used in that way. But this particular provision, I think it would be really unfortunate for the state and for the children that people are trying to help and get a better understanding about if that was used for leverage, because it's not a governor's initiative. It's not an executive branch initiative. I don't think you would have seen it in the letters coming from, you know, the executive branch. And so the concern, I think, is that if it's used in the it could be used in the K-12 bill as leverage. I think the hope was in the higher ed bill. You know, that might be another option. I just don't know with this labor language what the governor will do. I would like to have a chance to go back and talk with them about the labor provision. The best chance that language has is in the data bill. And my understanding now is that there's sort of some questions about that now, because they want to use it for leverage. And I just really wish that we could have one thing maybe that was sort of hands-off. That ought to be it.
Have you heard anything about how it's going in the K-12 bill?
I think that
I agree with you. I don't want to lose it for the P-16 Council.
Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas, my understanding is they're still in negotiations. They've got some fairly significant differences in the K-12 bill between the administration and legislature. I'm not clear on what all those differences are, but my understanding is this is now being kind of brought into the mix, and it will not,
not
leverage the governor's office. So, but it's a very, very important opportunity for the state, I think.
Is the issue in the K-12 bill with the governor's office or with the commissioner?
It's, Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas, I believe it's kind of one and the same. I think there's consistency between where the governor's office is on a number of reform issues and the Commissioner of Education. So,
but the Commissioner of Education, even though she wants this provision, she wouldn't. It's, like you said, it's a P20 initiative. It's not her initiative, so it's not something that she thinks is leverage. It doesn't leverage her, in other words.
Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas, she cares deeply about it, but when you're sort of looking at the mix of issues that are sort of executive branch and legislative, that would not be among them.
I think, Ms. Hegart, let's work on having that language in the data privacy bill if it doesn't get in the K-12 bill.
And then just one more thing, Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas. I mean, for our agency, there are a number of important policy provisions that you've been very helpful with. I mean, we're very grateful for it, and I frankly would like to see a bill that could be signed because it helps the agency a lot. But just know that the labor issue is one for the governor, and I just would like a chance to go back and check with them.
Ms. Hegart, and that, you know, that's where you come in, because we've helped you, and now you can help us with this. And as I said, it's in both places that emphasize that the governor is not bound by these recommendations. So basically, you know, on
the
front
but
page.
But, Mr. Chair, the governor's bound to appoint to labor, not necessarily the labor members that are the names that are being put forward. He still has to appoint two.
It's like he has to appoint three students. Does he have a problem with that?
No.
Okay. Mr. Chairman,
there are different issues.
I think the senators have to go on the floor and vote.
Well, yes, and we have to get upstairs, too.
Mr. Chair.
And we have to get upstairs, too. So let's just vote on the amendment here. And I think I should probably emphasize on page 2 of the amendment that I'm referring to the Minnesota AFL-CIO. That might give the governor some comfort that it's not the national AFL-CIO. So can I just offer that as an amendment? We incorporated in
what
the
Minnesota.
Minnesota. Just to make sure that.
Yeah.
Okay, we've got the amendment to the
Senator
amendment.
Mr. Chair, I have an amendment to the amendment, too. On line 111, I would move to strike two members are and say one member is.
And we've got three amendments going here first, so let's vote on the first one. First, which is on line 1.8, 1.9, the elimination. So we all understand that. All those in favor then of that language signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails, and that's adopted. Now, on line 2.10, the Minnesota, at Minnesota AFL-CIO. Any questions on that? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Now, Senator Roebling moves to change the line on 1.11 to one member is appointed from a labor organization, singular.
Did you just say from labor? Or does it
yes. Well, I would oppose the, we'll have staff work it out so it's correct grammar. But I would oppose the amendment because, as I said, right now out of 15 members we have, I think, the last time I was there, that every member is a member of the business community in the state of Minnesota. And the one Ventura appointee that was, I believe, if Ms. Hegard can help me, there was one leftover member from the Ventura administration whose term expired and was replaced by a non-labor person. Is that correct, Ms. Hegard?
Mr. Chair, I think that's correct.
That's correct. So the governor knows this issue was from last year, and he, basically has chosen to ignore it. So I would like to see a couple members out of 15. I don't think that's too much to ask for, being that he doesn't have to abide by it anyway. So we have the Roebling motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No. Motion does not prevail. Now we have the well, that's it.
That's it.
Close the bill up.
To adopt A6.
Oh, we already did this. We did the A6 last week. This was to show you what we did in the bill.
Okay.
And we just amend it now with the language. Any other concerns to come before the committee? If not, then any testimony on the bill? Further testimony? If not, Ms. Graham, do you want to come up here? No? Okay, you're saying good bill. Okay. If nothing else to come forward, then we'll...
I move that the conference committee be adopted.
Conference committee be adopted. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, members. We'll go back and vote on the tax bill and whatever else.
We have to get up to the floor right away.